Welcome to the Homeschool High School podcast, brought to you by SevenSistersHomeschool.com and the Ultimate Homeschool Podcast Network. I'm Vicki, and I am so excited to talk about one of my favorite topics today. So what I want to talk about today is helping your teens make new friends. You know, you guys know that in my other hat, besides having raised my kids through the homeschooling process, I also am a licensed professional counselor. And one of the things I have done over the years, over and over again, is work with all kinds of teens on how to make new friends. Because no matter where you are in life, there are times where you need a new set of friends. So it's either, you know, maybe you're a new homeschooler and so you're breaking into the homeschool community, or your family moved to a new location and so like getting new friends in that area, or change churches and needing to build new friendships that way. And, you know, we moms, we go through the same thing, don't we? Is there are periods of time, if we move, if different things happen, where we need to make some new friends, all right? So I'm going to give you some tips on how to make new friends. Now, all right, so let me just start off. You know, so it's helping your teens make new friends doesn't mean you make the friends for your teens. So just in case somebody thinks that's what I'm going to talk about, is we can't do this for our teens, but we can give them some skills for making those friends themselves, for creating their own network. And that's a skill that if they learn now, they can apply the rest of their lives and they can take it into their careers. Like, this is just a life skill. So let's say you're in a new area or you're starting new things and you need to make new friends in that area, or just make, you know, good colleagues and contacts and things like that. All right. So we want to work with our teens on some basic skills so that they can have the tools in their toolbox that they can choose to use. So the deal is they need to know they can choose to use these. They don't have to use these tools. It's their choice. But as long as teens feel like they have a choice in something, they will very often use those skills, okay? All right, so here we go. The first thing they need to do is find some things to try. And it doesn't mean that it's something that they are already passionate about or even want to do necessarily. They just need to try some new things. It's one of the most important things we can do for learning and practicing skills and actually discovering some things that we don't know whether we like or not until we try it, is to go do something new. So if you're new to an area and just starting homeschooling or just moved, whatever is bringing you to this new place, look around and start easy. Find some things that have other teens involved, all right? So like if your homeschool organization has a youth group, that is a really good place to start, is look in their online scheduling, you know, what is happening youth-oriented wise. If there's not a support group with just some youth activities, are there some classes that they can take? And whether they need to or not, you know, to take a class or two at a homeschool umbrella school, you know, someplace where there's some group learning for teens. You know, church youth groups and church missions trips are another way to, you know, be around teens doing something. Service organizations for teens that are out in the community, like library volunteers, food bank volunteers, you know, different things where there are groups of teens and going out and volunteering in a way, joining a sports team. So all those things are places where teens will meet new people, okay? All right, so once you pick a thing, and you know, unless you're an extroverted teen, you don't want to overwhelm them with 42 different things. So what you do is you make an agreement on what you're going to try. We're going to go give this a try. And then you give it, in most cases, at least two sessions, like two events you will go to. Sometimes you will know after the first time that you visit that. I don't really think so. So, you know, I'll give you a personal example. So there have been times where I have visited around to, you know, new churches or a new organization, and I will go to that place and for the very first time, and nobody is at the door to greet, you know, like nobody says, hey, welcome, you know, where would you like to sit or anything like that. And so then nobody talked to you the whole rest of the time. So I have been to whole like church meetings or other meetings here and there. It's not common where I've gone, I've lasted through a whole meeting and left and not a soul spoke a word to me. And I go like, well, those aren't my people, you know, and that's okay. There's never a lost event. Like I always came away from something like that, knowing that I am a better person for it because I survived it, you know, like a little boot camp experience, you know, got through it. But it's definitely not fun. But if you try twice, you will know, you know, if at least somebody talked to you, you know, the first time, then you know, okay, well, we'll try this twice. What very often happens is that the second or the third visit that you have at an organization, at a group, things really start easing up and it gets easier. So, okay. So you pick something out, you agreed on it, and then the teen goes to this event. All right. Before, when you arrive at the event, now, mom, you can't go in with the teen unless, you know, there's some rule that says mom has to go in with the teen. So they have to handle this on their own. Extrovert kids, they aren't going to care. You know, they are on their own. The introverts may feel kind of nervous and you may have to make a plan of how far into the building you will walk with them. And that's okay. But you don't take it on yourself. You know, you wait and see what your teen's cues are. All right. So before they get out of the car, you have them put their hands on their hips, you know, arms akimbo. And you count to 15, you know, 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, 1,004, you know, for 15 seconds. All right. What happens when you put your arms akimbo for a few seconds, their bodies release testosterone. Because even us girls have a little bit of testosterone running through our bodies. And weirdly, that testosterone gives the body a little boost of confidence, a little biological feeling of you can do this. And so you do. And you want to talk about all these things before you go, you know, don't spring it on the car. Okay. So before you go, you know, here's some skills we can use. And then before they walk into the building, have them pull their shoulders back, put their chin up just a little bit, not way up in the air, but just up a little bit. You know, when we're nervous, we tend to pull our shoulders in, tuck our chins under. So we're staring down at the floor, you know, all closed up. But if we have our shoulders back and our chin up with a Mona Lisa smile, just a little smile. Okay. When we have those, we call magic nonverbals. When we have those magic nonverbals on, those are invitational nonverbals. Those are saying, it's okay to talk to me. So you do those nonverbals before you walk into the building, and then periodically through the event, you check and make sure you still got your magic nonverbals on. Shoulders back, chin up, Mona Lisa smile, okay? And that invites people to come and talk to you. Generally, it, you know, within a certain period of time, somebody's going to wander over and start talking. If it's one of those events where you are socializing, you know, people just standing around getting snacks or whatever, go grab some snacks, you know, get something to hold in your hand. So we call that a tool. And you don't have to like it. You don't have to eat it all. You just need to have something in your hand. I don't know why that is, but there's a thing about holding something in your hand that is appropriate for the setting. So, you know, a cup of soda, some cookies or whatever, that it makes you even more open for people to come and talk. It's an invitational thing, having a tool. I don't know, but it works. So you do that. All right. Then once you get something in your hand, so you get some snacks, if no one is talking to you yet, what you do is go stand near the table that the snacks came from and scan the room. Okay. and you look and see where the clusters of people are, and you look and see if there's anybody on the outskirts, like they might be a new person too, because believe it or not, there's new people at things all the time. And if you see someone that's just standing by themselves, kind of at the edge, and maybe looking a little bewildered, you walk slowly over to them and smile and say, "Hi, you know, I'm so-and-so. What's your name?" They'll say their name, and hopefully they'll ask you a question back. But if they don't, ask them a question like, "Is this your first time, or are you an old timer here?" So have some questions that you've already planned ahead of time that you can pull out of your pocket and ask, you know, like, if they're an old timer here, you know, well, what do you like about that group? Do you have any siblings? You've been homeschooling long? What's your favorite subject? You know, things like that. Ask some questions. When you talk to somebody and you ask some questions and they start talking about themselves, they feel like you like them, even though they don't know them yet, you know? And then they are more likely to ask you some questions. But one way or the other, they feel connected to you and you've already got a first friend. Now, for younger teens, very often they are worried, especially if they've been in a school system for a while, you know, some traditional settings. They might be worried as, you know, am I going to talk to the wrong person? You know, they might not be the popular kids. And so we want to talk about the popular kid syndrome, okay? Let's think about this kingdom of heaven-wise. When Jesus came, did he go hang out first with the popular kids? You know, if you need to review the Gospels, go watch The Chosen. Is very often he was looking for people who weren't the popular kids, because in God's kingdom, it's backwards. The kids who might be shy are the ones that are more popular kingdom-wise. So we have to have the boldness and the faith to set aside, oh my gosh, what if I talk to the wrong person? And, you know, take that pecking order mentality out of our brains and think kingdom-wise. How do we want to be in God's kingdom in this group? So I always tell teens the story I read in one of John Maxwell's books. I don't even remember which book it was, but it was ages ago. So John Maxwell and one of his friends were riding in a cab on the way from the airport to a conference. And, you know, being neighborly people, John Maxwell and his friends were asking the cabbie, you know, about his family and all of his stories, you know, just they kept plying him with questions. And it was a really interesting little conversation, and they learned all kinds of things about the cabbie. But neither one of them told the cabbie any more about them, but that they're going to go speak at this conference that the cabbie's getting ready to drop them off at. And at the end, when the cabbie dropped them off at the conference site, the cabbie says, "Have a good time. It was so great to get to know you." So the cabbie didn't know anything about John Maxwell or his friends, except that he felt accepted, that somebody was interested in him. And that's all the get to know you he needed for that day. And that is to me just the most like Christ-like story. You know, like we show interest in other people, they feel accepted and warm. And then that becomes then very often the beginning of a friendship. Isn't that a sweet story? That's the introduction. You know, how do you get through those awkward first moments? Is so you arms akimbo, 15 seconds, get your testosterone up. Then your magic nonverbals, shoulders back, chin up, Mona Lisa smile. Okay, get your tools, some kind of food or something in your hands, and then scan the room. And if there's someone standing by themselves, you go and talk to them. All right. If it looks like you can't figure out what to do, then look at who's doing the serving, who's handing out things, who's setting up some chairs, who's, you know, putting more cookies on the plate. and you go to, whether that's an adult or a teen, and say, what can I do to help? And sometimes they'll put you to work. And then that automatically, if you're working alongside people doing something, automatically you're going to make a connection in that way. All right. So then you've got this event and you finally got someone to talk to. Or let's say you get there and there's nobody standing by themselves looking kind of sad. And so you've got to figure out what to do. Nobody needs any help volunteering, but you see clusters of people, this group, that group, that group. And you look for a group that has a kind of like engaged conversation where there's a bunch of people contributing. And then you go and you stand at the fringe of that group. All right, and listen to that conversation. And you don't have to say anything that time. You could if you wanted to, but just being near the group, you know, and then maybe get a little closer, so that you're close enough that people near you could see you nodding your head when you agree with something. That automatically, just in a nonverbal way, makes you part of the group. All right, so that's your first awkward moments. To me, the first moments at any event are the very hardest one. If you can get through the first 15 minutes, the rest is kind of easy from there comparatively. Okay. Then usually in organizations, after that initial rough, you know, first few minutes, then everybody's busy listening to a talk or dividing into groups and doing activities or whatever. And you just kind of figure out something to listen to, or you put yourself in there on a group. All right. So that's the opening introduction. Okay. And remember, keep those nonverbals going. That helps kids so much. As often as you can, then you want to have teens to know who they are. So in between events, have them work on being able to describe themselves. And you can start this before you go to an event, but definitely you want to keep an ongoing conversation. Like, who are you? What do you like to study? What do you want to do after high school? Do you have any hobbies? Take some personality tests. What are your personalities? What are the service projects you've done? And so if people ask questions, you don't have to stare at the floor and go, you know, like have some things about you that you already know. I often, especially our kids, when we do the speech class, we'll have them write an elevator pitch about themselves. And that's what they could say to somebody about themselves or their little business, if they were doing a business between the, you know, like the first and third floor on an elevator ride. So something very short, just little sound bites they can say about themselves, so they have something to say. And then you have them practice a little bit, if you can at home, on how to continue a conversation. So, you know, when they say something about themselves, then have them finish the thing they say about themselves and then ask that person a follow-up question, you know, that goes from them. Like, you know, I'm a Myers-Briggs INFJ. How about you? Or, I've been homeschooling for 5 years. How about you? Or I have, you know, 3 siblings. How about you? And so you practice those things, if they'll let you, in between events. Okay. All right. If your teens are going to something that is, there's more adults at, so you got like maybe a big church service project or something like that, then they'll be meeting people there. Very often those people are going to do, you know, if they're older generations, handshakes, like, hi, I'm so-and-so, and extends their hand for a handshake. That is something you want to practice with your teens. Like, this is a life skill. In America, you got to learn to handshake. So, you know, I know during the pandemic, that kind of went out of style. And so it's not as prevalent as it used to be, but there's still handshakers out there. And so, you know, they need to practice a good handshake so that they are not, you know, like limp fish, kind of like, I'm not sure when I shake your hand, or they're not squeezing somebody's hands, but a comfortable handshake. So gentle, but firm. Then once you go to the second event, one of the best things to do is start looking for ways to get involved. If there's a service project, if there's a side project, if there's setup or cleanup, you want to get involved doing those things because that gets you in on the kind of kids who also do things. And they are generally the friendlier and more fun kids over time. And so that's a life skill, even as adults. If you're going into a new organization, what can you volunteer for? The people who are engaged and active are the ones that are more likely to be the ones who are friendly over time. So that's the kind of the open door to things. A cool thing about too is when you're volunteering to help out, I'll help set up chairs, I'll help clean up afterwards, is you'll be working alongside people. You know, there's several of you putting up chairs, and as you throw another chair onto the chair rack, you know, you make a comment about one thing or the other, you know, like in great weather, or hey, how do we make all these chairs face the same direction? And just that little moment of conversation is the beginning of a connection, taking a stranger to an acquaintance level. And then you never know, if you volunteer enough together, you might become, you know, friends. And but just to know you got some acquaintances so that every time you go to that meeting, you know, you guys have something to say to each other, you know, service together, doing projects together is one of the very, very best ways to start making new friends. Okay, to wrap it all up, one of the really most important things we want to do is make sure your teens are telling you what went well. All right, let's be realistic. Not all teens are going to want to talk about it because some of them just need to think about it. But you need to have them, you know, suggest to them on the way home, think about, or let's talk about the things that went well. Well, I kept remembering to use my magic nonverbals. Hey, I remember to get a soda and hold it in my hand while everybody was standing around and talking. I remember to ask people questions. I remember to help clean up afterwards. And what you will find is that if they rehearse, you know, if they tell you about some things that went positive, they will be less likely to do all the social doubting that, you know, a lot of folks will do after a first event. Like, you know, have you ever experienced this? You know, you get home from an event or on the way home, your brain is going, why did you say that? Why didn't you do this? You know, so it gets all naggy and, you know, guilt trippy about, you know, the things you weren't or the things you didn't do. And what we want to do is not engage that, because that just makes stress. And so your brain learns that every time you go to another one of those events, it means stress. And the brain, danger, danger, don't do that. You know, don't go to another one of those because you'll just feel stressed afterwards. So we don't want to train our brain that going to an event means to socially evaluate yourself on the way home, looking for all the things you did wrong. Instead, we want to think about all the things that went okay or went right or felt great. So we want to finish the day on the positive and hopefully with some gratitude. And I know that can sound kind of cheesy, but what, you know, from my counselor's end of the screen here is that when we end an event remembering the positive and things that we are grateful for, that turns off the stress part of the brain and turns on the part of the brain that does smart thinking. You know, that gratitude and positives keeps the healthy part of our brain online. And of course, we know, you know, from scripture that we should give thanks. So having a gratitude feeling or expression about what they were able to do helps them, you know, spiritually be lined up with what scripture tells them to do. But, you know, for also, I'm just interested in them ending up biologically in a good place. So if they're thinking about the positive, their brain will think more about, hey, this ends up positive. And so I think I'd like to go back and do that again. All right. So that's a place to start. And hopefully over the season, we'll have time for, you know, more details on how to make new friends. But that's enough for today. So thank you for all being here. Don't forget, we have the Seven Sisters Homeschool Facebook group. It's the number 7 and then Sisters Homeschool all squished together into one word. And it's just a really friendly and supportive Facebook group. So people share all kinds of homeschool, high school questions, sometimes about younger ones too, a lot of high school stuff. And so it's a good supportive place to look. And then also lots of good ideas on our Pinterest page. So, you know, look up our Pinterest feed. And then also don't forget the website. So there are so many freebies in the Seven Sisters Homeschool store. And so when you go to the store and scroll down to freebies, like, my goodness, they're free. Well, this has been the Homeschool High School Podcast, brought to you by SevenSistersHomeschool.com and the Ultimate Homeschool Podcast Network. We will see you all next week.